You're listening to The Voice of Dog. This is Rob McWolf, your fellow traveler, and today's story is the second and final part of Silence and Sword by Royce Day, which was originally published in the Shared World anthology The Reclamation Project Year One, edited by John Roby and available through Fur Planet. When he's not defeating the plots of insane artificial intelligences, Royce is complicating the romantic lives of the Darktail family in his long-running Red Vixen Adventures series, available through Amazon.com, and has had short stories published by Armored Fox Press and Thurston Howell Publications. Previously, Joe, a leopard electronics tech living in the post-apocalypse city of Ambara Down, was hired by Hamia, a Wazagon mercenary, and his adopted fox daughter, Allie, to help remove a collar that prevents her from speaking, locked around her neck by the insane AI, Pax Machina. As they approach the Pax Machina facility, where Allie had once been held, Joe and Hamia must prepare to deal with Pax Machina's defenses, and with Allie's growing frustration and desperation. Please enjoy Silence and Sword, Part 2, by Royce Day. Two more days' travel south of the mountains and west of Blood River Pass finally brought us close to our goal. We stopped at the badly corroded remains of a sign that said, Bel Air, left exit 56, and at Hamia's direction, Ellie pulled off the main road and carefully guided Skiff into the forest along an uneven track perhaps 5 meters wide, following the remains of ferrocrete pillars spaced about 100 meters apart. They had probably been the foundation of some transport system from back before, but who really knew? Humans weren't in the habit of sharing their history with furries. As we traveled along at barely 10 kilometers an hour, Hamia checked his map repeatedly, counting out the pillars. When he reached 23, he told Allie to stop. "Here," he said, pulling himself out of the skiff and tapping the pillar with his knuckle. "This is what I found you, Allie. Curled up against this pillar, exhausted, but too frightened to sleep. Do you remember?" Allie looked around solemnly. What thoughts going through her head I couldn't imagine. Then the edge of her lip quirked up and she signed something to Hamia, which made him let out a guffawing laugh. "I was not at all frightening," he protested. I couldn't translate what she said, but the "yes, you were" implied in her expression was easy enough to make out. "All right, perhaps I did startle you, but you were amiable to me giving you water and a ration bar." She nodded, still smiling a little, though her eyes looked haunted by the memory. She turned around, scratching her head as she circled the pillar. "You can't remember which direction you were going before Hamia found you here?" I asked. When she nodded in agreement, I went on. "You want me to try using my equipment to triangulate where the Pax Machina facility is?" Allie nodded again, chewing her lip, ears folded back, as if she were afraid of the answer. I grabbed my toolbox from the back of the hover skiff and pulled out the signal detector. Allie unbuttoned her shirt collar, revealing the metal ring around her neck, the red light at the center, glowing much more brightly than it had back in my shop. I brought up the detector to her collar and began slowly circling it around her neck. "Okay, your collar is transmitting a signal, just like the other one did when we powered it up back at Ambara Down," I told her. "Now we just have to see if..." "There," I shouted in triumph as the detector let out an urgent bleep. "What?" Hamia demanded. "Something sent a signal back to the collar," I told them both. I held the signal detector out in front of me, slowly moving it back and forth until the bleep sounded again. I pointed toward the northwest. "It's coming from that direction." "Excellent," Hamia declared. He drew that ridiculously huge sword from its sheath, and Allie pulled out her pistol, removing the magazine and replacing it with one marked with a red stripe down the side. She mimed an explosion and mouthed, "Boom." Explosive needles. "Okay," I said. "You guys want to cover me while I narrow down where this place is?" Hamia exchanged a concerned look, with Allie. "You gave us a direction to look," he said. "Give Allie the detector, and she should be able to find it. You can stay with the skiff."
"Hey, I came this far," I protested. "Besides, you may need me to get you in, assuming the place is still active."
"I don't enjoy the idea of placing you at risk," Hamia said. "You are not trained in combat." "That's your area of expertise, not mine. Look, if anything starts shooting, I'll drop flat and wait until you call the all clear, okay?" The big blue lizard rumbled unhappily and finally said,
"As you will."
Then more softly, "Create to protect the foolish, including me." We started picking our way through the woods, mostly scrub pine and low needle bushes. Hamia took point, chopping through the underbrush with his sword. I was in the middle, periodically checking the signal detector, and Allie took up the rear. It took us almost an hour to work our way about a kilometer forward, as I kept an eye on the tracker and Allie and Hamia kept an eye on everything else. "Hold up," I said, swinging the signal detector around. I took 4 steps forward and turned 90 degrees and took 4 more steps, rechecking the device. "I think we're right on top of the signal source. Does any of this look familiar, Allie?" She turned in a circle, looking around with a deep frown on her face, then gave a helpless gesture. "I didn't even know what a tree was when I escaped that place. Never mind remembering what they looked like when I got outside." "How did you get out anyway?" I asked her.
"Ventilation shaft," she answered through Hamia. "I stole a little wrench and pried open a vent cover and found my way out." She shuddered. "I still remember Pax Machina calling for me to come back."
"Okay. So let's look for a vent shaft," I said.
"Difficult," Hamia said. "With all this brush and pine needles on the ground, we could walk right past it."
"So, we just need an aerial view," I started pulling off my boots and socks, flexing my claws. "I'm a leopard, remember?"
"So you are,"
Hamia laughed as I started to climb up the tallest tree I could find. "Scrub pines don't have the thickest trunks, but their bark had a rough, grabbable texture for my claws, which made up for the fact that I'm an urban kitty at heart. Pulled myself up as far as I dared, and sure enough, I spotted a square of ferrocrete about a meter wide, with a metal grate maybe 2/3 of that in diameter, covered up with enough leaves and brush that it would have been hard to spot on the ground. "To your right," I called down to them, "about 7 meters away." I shouted course corrections as Allie and Hamia walked carefully over to the grate, hopping out of the tree to join them after they spotted it. Allie had her arms folded across her chest, looking grim as she stared down at the steel cover.
"Do you recognize this?" Hamia asked her, sounding confused.
She gave a short nod, not meeting her eyes. I held my paw over the vent, feeling a soft outflow of air.
"Well, there's something active down there, that's for sure," I said. "But is this the best way to get in?"
"I do not like it," Hamia said. "You or Allie might crawl through there, but I could not. I would not be able to help you if something happened."
Allie looked up and gestured.
"There must be an entrance somewhere where food and construction materials for the things it had us building could be brought in."
"Makes sense," I agreed as Hamia rumbled softly and nodded. "How big was this place? Do you remember it all?" I asked. She thought for a minute, started to pace forward, then walked back and started over, taking smaller steps, matching the stride of her younger self, I guessed. She stopped at about 50 paces and scratched her ear in frustration.
"It was a very long time ago," Hamia tried to reassure her. "Think back to where you found the vent and walk in the direction that the machines usually emerged from."
Allie nodded, starting over at the vent, heading towards the south. Hamia and I followed. We had walked maybe 100 meters when
Hamia spotted a rusting pole with a camera mounted atop it, at the edge of a steep hillside.
"I believe we are close,"
he whispered, holding the sword out in front of him. Allie nodded, unholstering her pistol again. I grabbed a stick for myself, as if it would do much good against a Pax Machina unit. We scooted down, claws digging into the grass and dirt until we reached the bottom. A concrete doorframe matched the angle of the hill, sealed tight by a 2-meter by 2-meter steel hatch. I stepped closer and knocked on it experimentally. My knuckles hit it with a solid, echoless thunk. "That's a thick door," I noted, which earned me a withering, "Oh, really?" look from Allie.
"With no handle or visible hinges," Hamia added, his frown deepening.
"Should you see anything that might activate it?" I unslung my toolbox from my shoulder, setting it on the ground and grabbing an electric torch with a UV light. Shined it along the seams of the hatch, looking for anything like an electronic sensor set in the frame that I could possibly jigger. For almost a half hour of searching by every means I could think of, I came up short. Hell, the seal on the door was so tight I could barely fit a claw between it and the doorframe. "I'm sorry," I finally said. "Not even a control panel I could pop open and play with. It must be controlled by a remote signal. It may be a case of having to just brute force it open."
"Brute force is something I'm well practiced in," said Hamia, raising his weapon.
I hopped out of the way as he shoved the tip into the seal along the right-hand edge and dug his toe claws into the earth, then grunted and leaned in on the handle with his considerable weight. The sword barely bent and the door didn't move at all. "What's that sword made out of?" I asked as he continued to strain.
"City metal,"
he grunted, the tendons visible on his neck as he continued to strain. "A sword made out of a city's hull metal?" I asked in astonishment. "How did you ever get that?"
"Clan Ildu."
"Whoa!" Hamia said in surprise, losing his grip on the sword's hilt as he flew forward, tumbling head over tail into the pine needles, covering the forest floor, his sword flying in the opposite direction, as both Allie and I dodged out of the way.
"Well, that didn't work,"
he noted, pushing himself back onto his feet. Hamia grabbed his sword and tried again at the other three edges of the hatch, just in case. Damn door didn't budge as much as a millimeter. Allie gestured rapidly, her eyes wide with desperation, as Hamia sat on the forest floor, flexing his palms.
"She wants to know if there's anything else we can try," he said.
"Well, prying it open is out, and so is picking the lock," I said. I rubbed the top of my head in frustration. "I don't see anything like a blowtorch in the back of the skiff, either."
"I fear not," Hamia said. "Is that our only remaining option?"
"Only one I can see, short of explosives." "I have Ali, no!" Hamia started to interrupt, and then dodged out of the way as Ali pulled out her needle pistol. I dropped flat to the ground as she fired at the door, the darts exploding as they made contact. She emptied her whole clip into it, the sound of the explosions echoing up and down the hillside, until all we could hear was a clicking noise as her finger pulled on the trigger, over and over. Hamia kneeled in front of her, coming between her and the door, as he pulled the needle gun for a pause.
"Ali, I know you are frustrated, but we are so very close now," he said soothingly. "We just need to go back to Ambara Down and find the right equipment, and then return. 6 days, perhaps a little more."
I didn't know her gesture lingo, but the look of anger and frustration on her face was easy enough to translate. "No more waiting," she seemed to say. Paws and fingers waved furiously.
"We've waited 10 years to get here," Hamia told her. "A few more days?"
"No," she mouthed, then beat her fists on his armored chest plate. When he grabbed her wrist to make her stop, she opened her mouth and shouted aloud, "No!" Allie's collar erected immediately. The red light at her throat flashed and let out an angry beep, and she tried to grab it with her paws. Its surface crackled with energy, and then I smelled ozone in the air as I let out a ragged scream before collapsing in Hamia's arms. Hamia picked up Ellie and wrapped her in his cloak. Then we both jogged back as fast as we dared to the hover skiff. "Is she going to be all right?" I huffed, running still barefoot with my boots cradled in my arms, almost ready to dump them and go down on all fours to match his pace. "You don't know," he growled. He kept her cradled tightly in his arms, her body still twitching spasmodically. "This happened only once before when she was a small child, and that nearly killed her." "She's bigger now," I said. "If the college discharge is at the same strength as when she was 6, the overall effect shouldn't be as..." I shut my mouth as 2.5 meters of angry blue lizard glared at me. Sometimes it would be better if I kept all my electrical know-how to myself. When we got back to the skiff, Hamia laid Ellie on the ground on his cloak, while I grabbed a first aid kit from the skiff's cargo bed. Hamia took it from me and pulled out a vial of anti-seizure meds and another vial containing nanorobots, a program to repair internal injuries suspended in saline, both of which he injected into her arm. Allie's frantic twitching stopped, and she took in a deep breath, her eyes fluttering open. "Don't try to speak," Hamia said, pressing one big finger to her lips. Ellie blinked twice, her eyes finally focusing on him as he squatted beside her. "I am deeply sorry that I made you so angry, Ellie. But you must see now why caution is required. We will go back to Umbara Down and then return with proper equipment so that you may confront your tormentor with my sword at your side. Do you understand?" Ellie sighed, looking weary. Then she nodded and gestured to Hamia briefly, before turning on her side away from us. "She wishes to sleep now," he told me. "We will camp here overnight and start back to Umbara Down in the morning. I will, of course, pay you for leading us here, and if you are amiable, we will offer you a percentage of the contents of the facility once we open it and disable the Pax Machina units within." "That's fine, I guess." We stepped back a bit to give her a little privacy, and I asked, "Are you sure she's going to be all right?" The big guy flexed his toe claws, digging long furrows into the dirt as he stared down at them. "Physically, probably," he said. "Emotionally. Sometimes I forget she's not quite yet an adult by furry standards. By my people's, she's almost an infant." "Never been a parent myself. But I can't imagine raising her has been that easy for you." Hamia blew out his breath, like a steam engine releasing pressure. "My ignorance on matters concerning the upbringing of children is vast." He waved his hand in frustration. "It is something that is done by all the adults in the clan, males, females, and neuters. For someone to think they could go it alone is pure hubris." "So why did you take her back home to your folks?" Another big sigh, this one sounding like it was filled with deep regret. "That was never an option. We'll get the right tools and get that door open," I said. "We have to. That facility is our only hope of getting that accursed collar off of Ellie. It's already becoming difficult for her to swallow if she grows anymore, if it gets too tight." Hamia's hands tightened into fists. "I dread what she may beg me to do to end her suffering." I couldn't really think of anything to say after that, so I settled on helping Hamia build a fire and cook dinner for us both, setting aside a portion for Ellie if she woke up hungry. As we ate, the sun disappeared behind the hills. Hamia sat cross-legged, watching over the young vixen sleep and looking deeply worried. I'd like to say it was my incredibly fine-tuned senses that woke me up in the middle of the night. But I have to admit it was just my bladder. I got up, intent on finding a handy tree to pee behind, when I looked down and saw that Allie's sleeping bag was empty. I looked around the campsite, not seeing her in the moonless darkness. Worse, what I did find was my toolkit open on the ground, my signal detector, and multi-tool, both missing. Allie! Allie! I cried out urgently. Hammy's ears twitched. He woke with a muzzy, confused question in a language I didn't understand. Hammy, wake up. Allie's gone missing, I said urgently, shaking his shoulder.
What?
He said, blinking awake. He stood up, naked except for his shorts, all 2.5 meters of him. He grabbed his sword from where he'd left it in the hoverskiff's cargo bed.
Where did she...
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's what I figured, too, I agreed, grabbing my toolkit and following him as he started pacing as fast as he dared through the dark.
Is she mad? The delay would only have been for 6 or 7 days.
She's a teenager. 6 days may as well be an eternity, especially when she's this close to getting that damn collar off.
I'm not wrong, he admitted.
Soon Hammy was walking behind us as the trees grew thick, dependent on my superior night vision to guide us. My one fear, that we'd past the vent grate in the darkness, proved unfounded when we spotted the light ahead of us. We both quickened our pace, stopping before the open grate, light pouring upward from below.
Allie!
Hamia shouted, sounding frantic.
Allie, can you hear me? Please come out!
He waited a moment, pacing back and forth in front of the opening, his tail lashing, but neither of us heard anything.
Why is she doing this? I swore an oath to her that I would protect her and find a way to rid her of that cursed piece of tech.
I stuck my head in the opening and tried shouting as well. Called her name twice, listening as I looked down to the opening, only seeing a black rubber mat on the floor maybe 3 meters below, with the remains of a broken circulation fan lying atop it. The vent shaft was a bit over 0.5 meter wide, and Allie probably had slid down it easily. I could, too, if I was willing to hunch my shoulders a bit, but it was impossibly tight for Hamia to try.
I can go after her, I said.
Hamia looked stricken.
I cannot ask that of you. It's far too dangerous, and you have no bond with Allie as I do.
You're not asking, I'm volunteering, I said, sitting on the edge of the shaft.
You don't even have a weapon.
Allie does. I couldn't even pick up the big sword of yours if you gave it to me. I started sliding down, boots pressed to the sides of the shaft, grabbing my toolkit as I went in.
See you in a bit. Creator guide you,
he called back. I dropped awkwardly to the ground, trying to miss the circulation fan as I held onto my toolkit. I was at the end of a long steel hallway, lit by overhead lights with several steel doors on either side. The walls were painted white, and the air smelled musty and disused despite the air circulation. Of Allie, there was no sign, but on the plus side, there weren't any Pax Machina robots either. I pulled open a door at random, sliding it back. It opened to a cramped room not much bigger than a closet, with 2 empty cots sized for kits and a rack with kit-sized white jumpsuits. I closed it again, happy not to have found anything else.
Allie, I called out. You there?
I realized what a ridiculous thing that was to say, even as it left my mouth. She couldn't call out, even if she was in trouble. Which was ridiculous of me to think, as I heard her answering whistle up ahead. I padded forward quietly to the end of the hall, which ended in a T-junction. I turned to the left more or less at random and got lucky, finding Allie around the next corner. She was standing in the doorway, which opened up into a large workroom, with a 6 long steel tables and benches set in 2 rows in the center. The walls were lined with equipment and parts, and a large door led deeper into the facility at the end. Allie's face was set in a frown, her pistol in her paws that was pointed at the floor.
"Is this where you and the other kits worked?" I asked. She nodded solemnly. I stepped inside looking around. The first thing I looked at were the parts on the shelves. There were small, white, cube-shaped cases about
5 centimeters on each side, perhaps a few hundred in all. Other shelves had storage drawers filled with plastic-coated wires in various colors, buttons and switches, small control chips. Most curious was the collection of sound sensors. I pried one open with a claw and could tell it was very sensitive, perhaps able to detect sounds as low as 20 decibels, less than a whisper.
"Did they have you building several things or just one thing?" I asked Allie.
She held up a single finger.
"Okay, one thing. Can you show me? Do you remember how?"
Adderglare, I explained.
"I just want to figure out what they were for, why it was so important to keep you and the other kits quiet."
Allie nodded reluctantly, seeing my logic, I guess. She headed over to the parts shelves and pulled out a single case, several wires, a sound sensor, and other parts and small tools. She worked quickly, assembling the parts almost without looking at them, the moves nearly automatic. When she'd finished, there was an open case in front of her, wire in, control chip, and sound sensor in place. In the center of it was a smaller steel case, maybe 2 centimeters wide, connected by a pair of wires to the control chip.
"Do you know what that thing is?" I asked.
When she shook her head, I grabbed another one from the parts shelves. Then I took my multi-tool back from Allie and pried the little cube open. In the center, I found a smaller cube of what appeared to be gray modeling clay.
"Oh," I said, putting it down very carefully. Tried to imagine what would have happened if I'd jammed my knife in too hard.
"What?" Allie's expression seemed to ask.
"I think that's plastic explosive," I told her.
"My mom showed it to me once when she was teaching me how to safely dig up junk from the deep warrens. Your pal Pax Machina had you kits building sound-activated bombs. That little cube would be enough to blow up either my shop or your hover skiff to tiny pieces."
Allie's ears flipped back and her eyes went wide as her paw reached up to touch her collar unconsciously.
"Yeah,"
I agreed.
"Get the wiring mixed up or flip the wrong switch when you're building it, you all could have gone up with a sneeze."
I reached down, intending to use the multi-tools wire cutter to snip the connection between the chip and the bomb's power cell. Allie's paw shot out, grabbing my wrist to stop me. Then she picked up the case and cradled it in the crook of her arm.
"You want to keep that?" I asked.
"Okay, whatever. We need to get out of here. We can use that explosive to blow the front door, and Hamia can help us look around."
From her expression, it looked like Allie wanted to argue the point. But then she nodded reluctantly and turned towards the doorway leading back to the dormitory, which then slammed shut.
"Greetings, service unit number 652-396.
Pax Machina said cheerily over the loudspeakers.
"It has been 4,026 days since your last completed work shift."
Door at the front of the room rolled back, and a six-wheeled robot rolled in. It was about my height, built in a rectangular box shape with an ovoid sensor unit on top and 4 retractable tentacle arms spaced equally around its body.
"Please complete your work shift to earn your next calorie ration."
Allie stared at the unit. Her tail floofed out in a panicked brush, ears flat to her head, lips drawn back in a silent snarl. Pistol was in her paw, but she hadn't fired it yet.
Allie is a fox, not a service unit, I called out to Pax Machina. "She's not here to build your bombs. She just wants a damned collar off her neck."
"Service unit number 652-369's volume discouragement device is for the safety of this facility. It cannot be removed."
Allie fired a pistol, and a steel needle pinged off the robot's sensor unit. The robot's front arm shot out, wrapping around Allie's neck and lifting her bodily off the ground as she dropped the bomb case.
Attempting to damage Pax Machina may result in the revocation of oxygen privileges,
it stated as Allie's eyes began to bulge out of their sockets. I ran over to the work table, grabbing the little cube of plastic explosive and tossing it at the robot. It bounced off and landed on the floor in front of the robot. Feet kicking desperately in the air, Allie fired at the robot once more. The first needle just bounced off its hull again. Then she fired downward, aiming at the lump of explosive. It detonated, sending both Allie and I flying across the room, as the robot's torso, fortunately, absorbed most of the blast, disintegrating it.
You okay? I asked her, picking myself off the floor as my ears rang. She sat up, coughing as I helped her untangle the now limp tentacle from around her neck.
Why didn't you just fire one of your explosive needles at it? She held up her paws, miming shooting her pistol at the palm of her opposite hand held up at an angle.
You used them up when you shot at the door? I asked,
and she nodded in confirmation, giving me an embarrassed smile.
Oh, great.
I stood up and looked around. The door back to the corridor and the vent shaft where he came in was shut tight, but the door leading deeper into the facility was still open. Allie gave my signal detector back, and I checked the direction the collar was transmitting.
Guess we go forward, then, I said, and she nodded in agreement.
She grabbed a double handful of the explosives and the cube she'd built, and we slowly began to creep through the door. It led out into a hallway twice as wide as the one in the dormitory, with more sliding doors. I opened the first one to my right and found a room with a padded chair sized for kits with straps to hold the sitter down. I swallowed and backed away to almost bump into Allie, who was staring in quiet fury at another doorway. Inside were more shelves, fitted with collars like Allie's. There had to be at least 24 of them, matching the number of beds in the dorm rooms I'd seen.
How many kits did Pax Machina take? I asked aloud. Do you remember how many were here with you?
Allie thought for a moment, then held up her paws, splaying her fingers once, twice, three times.
30? Then where did they go?
All service units were placed in long-term storage once they had completed their current work assignment,
Pax Machina answered over the loudspeakers, in that same damn cheerful tone. I flinched briefly. Even without visible cameras, the facility's AI had to be tracking Allie's movements with her collar. Maybe even listen to our conversations. I got a hold of myself and asked, are they here?
The service units are no longer at this facility.
We started walking forward. Me with one of the explosive cubes in my paw, Allie with her needle gun out.
So where is long-term storage, then? I asked.
That information is not available to non-Pax Machina units.
We went through another open door to what had to be the entrance to the facility. The angled hatch that had defeated us yesterday was right in front of us, though through possibly a garage or loading area, judging by the marks on the floor where vehicles must once have sat. Along the walls were several large tubes, 2 meters long by 1 meter wide, whose purpose wasn't obvious to me.
This facility has completed its most recent production run, correct? I asked aloud.
That is correct!
So, service unit number 652-369 doesn't actually have any more assignments, is that right?
Beside me, Allie blinked and gave me a what-do-you-think-you're-doing expression.
That is correct! Thank you for the clarification updating 652-369 status to redundant.
Three service tentacles unfolded from the ceiling, grabbing Allie by the shoulders and neck and hauling her into the air. She kicked her feet wildly as one of the tubes trundled away from the wall, opening up to reveal a padded space big enough to deposit a kit or a small fox.
Oh, wait! I called up cheerfully, thinking fast. Before you do that, could you open the door and let me out?
Certainly,
Pax Machina replied.
Have a nice day.
With a hydraulic whine, the steel hatch slid back, revealing the forest, the early morning sun peeking above the horizon, and 2.5 meters of righteously furious half-naked blue lizard, sword in hand, rushing in the moment the hatch opened.
Ollie!
Hamia roared. He swung his sword in a wide arc, slicing through the tentacles holding her in the air. She dropped to her feet, coughing and running with me out the door, as Hamia roared again, his sword smashing through the container tub.
Do not touch her, you ungodly mechanisms!
Destruction of Pact Machina units may result in revocation of oxygen privileges,
Pax Machina warned as more tentacles reached down towards him. Past the door, the tentacles seemed unable to reach. Or maybe they were just uninterested.
Hamia, we're clear! Get out of there!
I shouted as Allie whistled loudly beside me. Hamia sliced through another tentacle, dancing backwards out the hatch as the remaining ones reached for him. Thinking fast, he slipped his hull metal sword underneath the closing hatch, jamming it open. When we were all outside and safe, Hamia turned to Allie, his face a mixture of fury and relief.
Allie, you foolish, foolish eggling. You had no right to terrify an old lizard like that.
Oh, don't worry, it was worth it, I said, pointing to her neck. See? Allie reached up, touching the bare, matted fur of her neck, the collar she'd worn for her whole life gone. Her eyes grew wide as Hamia let out a roaring whoop of joy.
How?
She mouthed and signed. When Pax Machina mentioned the kids had been moved after completing their assignment, I remembered all the callers back in that one room. I told them. If they were finished making those stupid sonic bombs, there would be no reason to wear them anymore. Once I'd convinced the facility you'd finished your work, it popped it off when it was getting ready to drop you into that container. I'm sorry I didn't have any way of warning you, though, Allie.
It's okay, she signed as Hamia interpreted. It's...
She gave up trying to form coherent words and just hugged me, sobbing in relief.
What do we do now? Hamia asked. I don't like the idea of this place remaining active for other kits to be imprisoned so cruelly within it.
I gotta agree with you, I said. Believe me, I love the salvage, but... Allie pulled away from me and signed something up to Hamia, a fierce grin on her face.
What do you mean it's taken care of? He asked.
She pulled the sonic explosive she'd built earlier from her pocket, flicking the activation switch on the side and sending it sliding along the smooth concrete floor to stop at the end of a line of little explosive cores she'd been dropping like breadcrumbs as we walked down the hall from the assembly room. Then Hamia and I ducked for cover as she stepped away from the hatch, pressing her fingers to her lips and letting out an ear-piercing whistle. There was a loud series of boom, boom, boom as the explosive detonated, ending with a deafening boom as they reached the assembly room. The entire top of the hill lifting into the air briefly before dropping back down, forming an irregular crater, as the remains of the facility collapsed in on itself, dust and smoke rising in the air. Hamia, who'd fallen with Allie and I when the explosion went off, sat up, laughing uproariously.
Well done, Allie. Wonderfully done.
Allie stepped over to him, gripping the lizard's hand in both her own, her voice scratchy as she whispered,
Thank you, Father.
3 days later, we made it back to Embara Down and shared a round of drinks at the damsel fly.
I'd lost my chance at a king's ransom and salvage, but I was still feeling pretty good. I'd helped Allie get that damn collar off, and the remaining half dozen explosive cores she'd had left over in her pockets would be enough to pay my rent for nearly a year. Maybe more if I could use them to spin a story to a gullible claimer about a Pax Machina facility just waiting to be found. So what now? I asked them as I finished off my third pint. There were 30 kits being held prisoner by Pax Machina, Hamia said. I will not be satisfied until I know their fate. If they are still alive, they must be freed. And Pax Machina taught not to attempt such cruelty again.
You gonna keep following this big lizard then, Allie? I asked her. She grinned at me, trading sips of honey tea with her beer to ease her throat as she practiced talking again.
Why not? She whispered. It's been fun so far.
Good luck to you both, then, I told them, standing up and shaking their hands. I had a feeling they'd find those kits, and I hoped I'd have a chance to help them when they did.
This was the second and final part of Silence and Sword by Royce Day, read for you by Rob McWolf, Werewolf Hitchhiker. You can find more stories on the web at thevoice.dog, or find the show wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you for listening to The Voice of Dog.